You're listening to Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're hearing the sounds of East 7th Street, downtown Los Angeles, Skid Row, on a regular weekday morning, just before the world changed. Crowded and unsanitary conditions have been a big concern here for a long time, but now there's a fast-spreading coronavirus pandemic. Skid Row has its first confirmed case of COVID-19. Now, this is news that people who live and work in the area have been dreading. If you haven't been to Skid Row lately, maybe you've never been, picture sidewalks completely blocked by rows of tents, people navigating around them. Everything is close together. And even more people walking in the street and cars stopping and swerving to avoid them. Plus, a highly vulnerable population. Lots of underlying health conditions, including the stress of being homeless. Are the city and county prepared to contain the coronavirus on Skid Row? KCRW's Anna Scott is with me to talk about it right now. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Steve.
So what do we know about this first confirmed case?
Yeah, well, first, I want to say you're totally right about the conditions on Skid Row. It's almost impossible to stay 6 feet away from anyone just walking down the street there. So this is very alarming. This first case is an employee at the Union Rescue Mission. It's one of the many shelters there on Skid Row, right in the heart of Skid Row. He was a driver at the mission. So his job was to get things like food, medical equipment. I just spoke with the mission's CEO, Andy Bales, who thinks it's likely that this employee got infected not on Skid Row, but out on one of his routes. And the mission is working with the LA County Public Health Department to try and track where the employee was and to stop any spread.
I believe we have it contained, but we're also praying very hard for containment and for our co-worker and friend who's in the hospital.
So this employee is on a ventilator right now. It's a very serious case. Meanwhile, at the mission, the LA County Public Health Department is there. They're checking symptoms. They have about 100 residents and employees quarantined on the third floor. And then there are 8 people who had direct contact with this employee who are quarantined off-site. So they're taking the measures that they can take, but it's still a very scary situation. Like I said, the Union Rescue Mission is right in the heart of Skid Row. There are a lot of shared spaces in the building, from bathrooms to sleeping areas. There's a lot of foot traffic in the lobby and also just right outside the doors. Andy Bales says everybody has anxieties about this, including him.
I'm hiding them and I'm putting on a good face, but fatigue showing up in my eyes, and I can feel some stress on my chest, like days when I had a heart attack and I felt like an elephant, that even though I'm acting like everything's okay, there's stress building.
It's hard not to fear that this virus could be uncontrollable there.
Yes, and it's not just people at the Union Rescue Mission who are nervous. When I heard about this, one of the first things I did was I started calling people I know who live in Skid Row. And one person who came to mind right away was Ed Givens. He's 67 years old. He has underlying health issues, and he lives in a subsidized apartment that's right next door to the Union Rescue Mission. So I gave him a call. He said he's very worried because Skid Row still, just in recent days, recent weeks, has been not only crowded, but the most crowded that he's ever seen it. And he's lived there for more than 20 years.
Yeah, it's bad. You know, it's the worst I've ever seen as far as people being on the streets. I'm concerned, of course. I'm definitely concerned about it. But, you know, I'm like washing my hands like at least 20, 25 times a day, which I've never done before.
And he's also staying inside for the most part. He does have his own apartment, but he does have to go out sometimes for small things, for food. So he's trying to practice social distancing as much as possible.
You know, one thing that jumps out at me, though, Anna, it's not only people on the streets or in the shelters on Skid Row who are susceptible. Even the people who are housed don't often have the luxuries like grocery delivery, for example, or even private bathrooms. So that's a problem.
That's right. Ed Givens does have his own bathroom, his own apartment, but there are other buildings on Skid Row with shared bathrooms, not only shelters, but buildings like SROs, single room occupancy buildings, and you just can't avoid common areas. So I also called up a guy named Paul Williams. He lives in one of those SRO buildings, the Madison Hotel. And he says so far for himself, he feels okay. He has some cleaning supplies and he's been sanitizing the shared bathroom every time he goes in there before he uses it. But he's really worried about the neighborhood for a lot of these same reasons. He says on the streets, not a lot has changed in recent weeks, and that really worries him.
For me, that's troubling for that area because it's just so high density and the people down there are not practicing the social distancing. I'm cognizant of it. And I think what's hard with the people that are unhoused, especially, is that a lot of them, they're not being bombarded constantly with CNN and MSNBC and Fox News, you know, and it hasn't hit home yet.
What are city and county officials trying to do to change the situation on the streets, Anna, to keep people safe there?
Right. Well, I talked about the public health officials who are at the Union Rescue Mission, specifically responding to that case. I also spoke with officials at the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority. They said they're working with the county. They have outreach workers who are going around Skid Row trying to educate people about social distancing best practices. They're also installing toilets and sanitation stations around Skid Row so people can wash their hands, things like that. But it's not clear right now exactly how many of those are up and running. The city is opening new emergency shelters in recreation centers, and those are for unhoused people all over Los Angeles. So not only people who are currently in Skid Row, but other providers, social service providers in the neighborhood say that they're afraid this isn't enough and that none of it is moving fast enough. So another person I spoke to is Mike Arnold. He runs the Midnight Mission, which is another large shelter on Skid Row. And they're doing everything they can there to have very intensive hygiene protocols. But Mike Arnold says there are two things that they desperately need that are out of their own hands. They need places for people to go who need to be quarantined if they are sick, and they need places for people who are just in high-risk categories to go to be relocated to so that they can isolate.
We're all, I think, really terrified, and I'll tell you what I worry about every single night is we have folks in here that are 80 years old. We have folks in here who have no immune system left. And we've been, to date, not provided any venue to help these incredibly vulnerable people get to some place that's a little safer than a congregate shelter in Skid Row. So we don't seem to be terribly well prepared to deal with something like this.
Now, LA County is working on procuring hotel and motel rooms for people who need medical shelter, and they're designating some of those rooms specifically for people experiencing homelessness, but those are not up and running yet.
So even beyond Skid Row, Anna, this points to how vulnerable people experiencing homelessness are in this pandemic. I mean, they're vulnerable anyway to the elements of being outside and all that, but really susceptible in something like this.
Yeah, that's right, Steve. There's actually a new study that just came out that estimates as many as 2,600 people experiencing homelessness in and around LA could eventually need to be hospitalized for COVID-19. And out of all those people, 900 could require intensive care. So obviously, if that comes to fruition, those are very alarming numbers.
Certainly very alarming. KCRW's Anna Scott, who reports on homelessness and housing. Anna, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Continuing on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Here in food-loving Los Angeles, restaurants have been forced to do some things differently these days. Some have completely shut down their places. Some have completely shut their doors with stay-at-home orders. Others have changed their business to takeout. A crafty few have even taken their surplus food and shifted their restaurant spaces into bodegas or grocery stores, selling everything from toilet paper to broth to basic fruits and vegetables. Well, let's talk about the new and hopefully temporary normal for restaurants. Mona Holmes writes for Eater LA, and she's a regular contributor for Greater LA. Mona, Hi.
Hi, Steve.
We're also joined by Francesco Zimone, owner of L'Antica Pizzeria da Michelle in Hollywood, and Jordan Ogron, who's the owner of Tess Restaurant in West Hollywood. And I want to welcome you both as well.
Hi, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Mona, I'm going to start with you. Under the new rules, restaurants can only operate for takeout or delivery. Obviously, a huge blow to the industry here in L.A., right?
Yes, that's right. It's that upset, that blow has been going on since March 17th when Governor Newsom called for restaurants throughout the state to close their dine-in areas. And that was only a couple of days after Mayor Garcetti called for the same action on the 15th. And these businesses, these restaurants are just not seeing their regular customer base anymore. And it's been a challenge to pivot these businesses to delivery and takeout.
This trend that I mentioned to you at the outset is these restaurants becoming sort of ad hoc grocery stores. How many restaurants have done that?
Oh, a good number. I'd say an estimate maybe about 80 have done so. And I first noticed them making the switch to offering grocery products was with the popular Gorilla Tacos in downtown. The team produced a quote-unquote emergency taco kit with all the necessary fixings for a four-person taco dinner. And from there, we just saw an explosion of restaurants taking this a step further. And so there's a ton of them, like I said a second ago, about 80 that are offering their standard menu items, and then items like milk, flour, canned goods, dried pasta, coffee beans, you name it.
So this is legal right now, Mona, even though probably just a few weeks ago, it wasn't.
No, it's been a challenge for restaurants to figure this out. I mean, it's been a challenge for the city, for the county, for the health department to figure out what to do. Because just a week ago, LA County shut down the Bakari PDR in Playa del Rey and cited the restaurant for selling non-perishable grocery items without a permit. And, you know, Bakari, just like everyone else, had supplemented their kitchen items with items like dry goods and toilet paper. But the rules are changing so quickly right now. And yes, you're right. That was illegal a couple of weeks ago. And but just yesterday, the county issued new guidelines that that would have been unheard of. And so it's been this back and forth between the health department, the board of supervisors. They all realize that these are new times and that they need to adapt.
Francesco, you're one of the restaurants. L'Antica is one of the restaurants that's selling groceries. How did you come to that decision?
Well, you know, we're a Neapolitan restaurant. Naples is famous to be a place where we pretty much grew up doing everything. So this was really fun because it's like, you know, we find a lot of fun into challenging times. So we decided that because people loved all our ingredients, and I had the feeling that the most important thing here was not just the economical aspect, but also to keep people entertained, because the emotional aspect of a crisis is as important or more than the economical one. So we thought, how about we create pizza kits so that maybe people can eventually avoid fighting at home, since they're going to have to be secluded inside. And maybe they can have some fun with their loved ones or the kids, keep people entertained.
How does it work in trying to get people in and out of your restaurant? You know, you've got the social distancing orders, you know, people staying as far away from each other as possible, and then they're coming in and they're shopping like it's a like it's some sort of bodega or grocery store. How does that work?
Well, we got somehow lucky because 3 weeks ago, I put together my entire staff and I said, guys, you know, who wants to work? Who doesn't? Everybody said we are in. So I said, okay, the first things we do is I want to make sure that we're protected. And in order for us to be protected, no one needs to come in the restaurant anymore. So we created an entire area that was meant to be just for production. And then the rest, we just put three or four. We have sofas at the entrance of the restaurant. We put them apart, one from the other, so that people could have their distance when they would walk in. Fortunately enough, the guidelines that the health department and the city had given us yesterday mirrored exactly my, you know, what I told my guys. And for us was we have the usual two entrances. So everybody that comes to work, I made them sign a document that states that they only do home work home, and they basically self-quarantine so that we can feel comfortable in our own environment when we're at work.
Have you taken a big hit as far as money goes? Are you still employing all of your staff, the people you told to, you know, quarantine at home?
I'm extremely proud. That's one of my favorite questions. I think, I don't know if there is any other restaurants that have kept all the employees. We have them all. We didn't let go of anyone. We got hit 86% of our sales, which means we're in trouble, but we get out of it.
Jordan, how are you guys doing over there at Tess?
We're doing well, Steve. It's been chaotic, that's for sure, trying to turn an entire cafe into a market literally overnight.
And how have you adjusted? I mean, you just heard Francesco say that he's lost 86% of his business. Is that about the same number for you, too? Has it really been that bad as far as adjusting from dine-in to take-out and delivery?
It has, yeah. It's been very difficult, but thankfully, you know, we're in an area where we have like 400 residents. We're on the ground floor of two very tall resident towers. And so we have those residents that support us, and they're very happy that, you know, we're doing what we're doing to help them as well. And then we have, you know, thousands of homes right above us in the hills, you know, because we're right on the base of Sunset. So it's been good so far.
Mona, what about LA's high-end restaurants? Some of them are making more affordable takeout menus, right? It's not just selling things like a grocery store. I mean, they're trying to be creative, I think, in this different environment.
They've kind of had to cut costs in a lot of ways just so that they can have a greater appeal to those that want to eat something other than what they've been eating at home, you know, from going to the grocery store. So you'll find a lot of restaurants like Gwen in Hollywood, Republique on La Brea, in Santa Monica, Birdie G's, all of them are doing this. And you'll go to these menus and you'll see some items that are definitely not their typical price. They've had to, because they'll do anything and everything they can to stay in business and pay their employees.
Francesco, back to you. Is this sustainable for you, for if it has to go weeks and weeks or even months?
That's a very tough question. I don't think these would be anyhow sustainable, because restaurant business are not sustainable to begin with at full capacity. We are being very successful in our first year of operation, but the margins are ridiculous. So there's no way that you can be in any sort of way out, that you can be profitable.
Jordan, how about you? Is this sustainable for you for at least a short period of time, or how long can you survive like this?
Yeah, I think it can definitely be sustainable. I do want to hit a few points, though, that Mona and Francesco both hit on. You know, as Mona said, restaurants like us are, you know, doing a lot of things other than grocery to also survive and keep, you know, promoting our businesses. Like, we're making our own, you know, pasta sauces and soups and salads. Like, we are making prepared foods as well. And then we're about to launch, you know, hot food as well, so that we can bring even more line cooks back and they can keep cooking. But I think a really important thing that should be discussed amongst, you know, the higher ups in the city, like, you know, Garcetti and then up to Governor Newsom. And maybe Mona could even write an article about it, because the one thing, and I'm sure Francesco would agree, that I think needs to now be looked at is that it is so important that all these county and state offices work together. You know, I think it is pretty ridiculous, is a PG-13 word I can use, that, you know, the ABC was, you know, incredible in immediately saying that, you know, all the restaurants and markets, et cetera, you know, can sell liquor to go. You know, they're going to kind of lighten the regulation so that, you know, everyone can continue to make money. And then, you know, the health department's response was, in a way, like, ridiculous, not fair. And, you know, it's crazy that these county offices, state offices can't work together. A lot of us are all going to have to reopen our restaurants. You know, reopening a restaurant takes a lot of time. It'd be really important, you know, moving forward, that, you know, all the county and state offices work together to make this easier on all these small businesses like mine and Francesco's.
Is there anything positive, Mona, that you think could come out of this?
I hope so, Steve. You know, it's impossible to project all of this, you know, when restaurants will be able to return when there's no end date to all of this, no solid end date, along with Jordan's complaints about, you know, the state, municipalities, the cities, the government not really giving consistent answers. I can see how, you know, it's hard for me to be optimistic. I mean, I've been on the phone for weeks with chefs who would love to be able to do all of this tomorrow to cook you something really delicious. But then you have the high cost of running a business in this city that, along with this new thing that's, you know, adding already frustration to restaurant owners. You know, they have to impose safety measures to make sure that their employees are safe. And so I really, truly hope that they can hold on, but the projections are not good.
Mona Holmes, our regular contributor to Greater LA, writes for Eater LA. Mona, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Francesco Zimone, owner of L'Antica Pizzeria de Michelle over in Hollywood. Francesco, thank you.
What a pleasure. Thank you so much, Steve.
And Jordan Ogron, who owns Tess over in West Hollywood. Jordan, good luck. Best of luck to you, my friend, as well.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
Finally today on Greater LA, a moment of winged beauty and persistence in a difficult time. While your life may have been upended by COVID-19, life in the natural world goes on. You may have seen some colorful creatures fluttering around these parts lately. Painted lady butterflies are migrating northward from Mexico, flying north across Los Angeles, heading to the northern states and Canada for the warmer months. Leela Higgins, a senior manager for community science at the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County. Hi, Leela.
Hi, Steve.
Tell us a little bit about the painted lady. How do you recognize them? Are they like monarch butterflies?
Well, so painted lady butterflies are a very common butterfly in LA. We can see them almost all year round, but we're seeing them in these huge numbers right now because they're in their migration. And last year, people might remember that there was a massive, massive migration with hundreds of thousands, millions of butterflies coming through LA, and people saw thousands of them flying past. This year, the migration's quite a bit smaller, but it's still big enough for people to notice. And they do look a lot like monarch butterflies. They're a little bit smaller, and their wings are patterned with like a brown, orange, black, and white markings. So they're a lot more splotchy, which is a very scientific term, than monarchs are.
Can they fly, Leela, all the way from Mexico to Canada? That seems like a long trek for such a tiny butterfly.
So these butterflies, like monarchs, can go long distances, but it is unlikely that one individual is going to go all the way from Mexico to Canada. When they're caterpillars, they're really eating a lot and they're building up their fat reserves. Incidentally, that yellow splat that you get on your windshield, that's the fat reserve in an insect. And that fat reserve helps to fuel their journey. And when the fat reserve's gone, then they will try to find a mate and lay their eggs on plants for the next generation to continue the journey forward. So they may not be going all the way from Mexico to Canada, but their offspring certainly will.
As is usual, Leela, when we talk to you, this turns into a science experiment. I know the Natural History Museum is trying to collect a lot of data on the butterflies. What can people do to help you out with that?
So it's really easy. We put together a blog post with some really simple instructions. Basically, all you need to do is print out a data sheet, or you can get a blank piece of paper, and you tally the number of butterflies you see flying past you in a 10-minute interval. We recommend doing it around noon. Insects really love the heat, and butterflies are no exception. So around noon is the warmest part of the day. Today's pretty cloudy, so we might not see that many, but it's really important to get the data even when we're seeing none.
So you're like turning into a Nielsen family, right? You're hey, I saw this many butterflies today, and this is the time that I saw. What are you going to do with this information, by the way?
Our curator of entomology, Dr. Brian Brown, he's the one that's interested in this data. He is stuck at home like many of us, and he decided to start counting the butterflies last week. His neighbor kids were like, what are you doing? And so he decided, because a lot of kids are home, and he had them start counting butterflies as well. And he thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting if I knew what was going on, not just in my neighborhood, but what's going on over the whole of Southern California? And that would make the data much more meaningful. So he was like, hey, Leela, want to collaborate on this? And I was like, absolutely. Let's get started.
Sounds like a really cool thing to do while you're, forgive me, cocooned in your apartment or home at this very trying time. Leela Higgins, Senior Manager for Community Science at the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County. Leela, as always, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
By the way, if you want to help the museum count those painted lady butterflies, and let's face it, what else do you have to do? Go to our website, kcrw.com/greaterLA. We're going to post a link for you this afternoon, so check it out a little bit later, kcrw.com/greaterLA. You can subscribe to the podcast as well. Share your thoughts with us. We know it's a tough ride. Tell us how you're doing at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Join us Monday through Friday, by the way, at 1 and 6:30. That is going to do it for us. How has your life changed? Are you in the restaurant industry? Newly unemployed? We're interested in your story. Tell us about it. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ears and for your time. Take care of yourself and have a great day.